from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Even as the countries of Syria and Iraq continue to fight against the Islamic State, or ISIS, the attention of the world's media has seemingly drifted away from the victims of the radical Islamic forces. Christians and other religious minorities have suffered beyond comprehension, and there seems little prospect for their immediate relief. This week on Register Radio, we talk to Register Senior Correspondent Edward Penton about his recent trip to Iraq and the refugee camps there. And then we're joined by Register writer Benjamin Weicker to discuss the true meaning of pluralism and multiculturalism. Welcome again to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, a senior editor for the National Catholic Register and senior contributor for EWTN, and also co-host of Register Radio. I'm filling in as host for Register Editor-in-Chief Jeanette DeMello, who is away on maternity leave. Mother and baby, by the way, are doing wonderfully. Thanks for all of your prayers. And thank you for joining me today. Since the emergence of ISIS in Iraq and Syria, hundreds of thousands of Christians and religious minorities have been brutally murdered, tortured, and driven from their homes. Many who had lived in the northern Iraqi city of Mosul and the surrounding villages in the Nineveh Plain are now struggling to survive in refugee camps, especially in the area of Erbil. The Register's Rome correspondent, Edward Penton, had the chance to travel there to see for himself the situation facing our Christian sisters and brothers. Edward began reporting on the Pope and the Vatican with Vatican Radio before moving on to become the Rome correspondent for the National Catholic Register. He's the author of The Rigging of a Vatican Synod, an investigation into alleged manipulations at the Extraordinary Synod on the Family, and is published by Ignatius Press. Edward, welcome back to Register Radio.
Thanks, Matthew. Good to be back with you.
So you visited Christian refugees who fled Mosul and the surrounding Christian villages in Iraq after ISIS invaded there in June 2014. At this point, what's the situation like for them?
Well, it hasn't actually got much better, Matthew, since they were forcibly evicted from their homes in one night. Actually, over 100,000 of them were forced during the night in August 2014, and they fled to parts of Erbil in the center of Kurdistan, the capital of Kurdistan, and other places where there have been refugee camps set up for them. Since that time, it depends where they are, but some of them have fairly good conditions, but small. They live in caravans. They have air conditioning. They have quite a few facilities, but obviously it's not adequate. It's not sufficient. It's not anything like the life they lived. And after 2 years, just over 2 years, they're getting a bit fed up, and they're rather losing hope. And there's a growing sense among them that they'd rather not go back. They'd like to leave Iraq altogether. So that's the big danger, that the longer they stay in these camps, the more likely they are to leave Iraq.
Yeah, and what sort of numbers are we talking about? How many refugees are there?
Well, there's 100,000. There were actually 125,000, if you include Mosul as well, of Christians who were forcibly evicted, and they just fled the cities. And I think so far 25,000 have actually left Iraq, so that leaves about 100,000 left in the country, and they're mostly in different refugee camps, or some of them are lucky to have houses, but a lot of them are living in very small sort of caravans in these camps. Usually they're about 5,000 in each camp, or depends, but those are the bigger ones, yes.
And what were the circumstances that brought you there exactly?
I was part of a delegation with Aid to the Church in Need, of the Italian office. They brought over Italian bishop, and also they had collaboration with Polish and Panamanian aid agencies and the Panamanian government to bring humanitarian aid to the country, which arrived while we were there. So it was, those were the main reasons for going, and I think they wanted some journalists there to cover that as well.
Mm-hmm. And how difficult was it to get from Rome all the way to northern Iraq?
Surprisingly easy, actually. Erbil is quite a modern town. It was made to be the Dubai of Iraq, and in many ways it reminds one of Dubai. It's gives skyscrapers and businesses and quite a lot of flourishing places there. But it's also, but that makes it quite easy to get to. There are quite big airlines that go there, like Lufthansa. We went on Austrian Airlines there via Vienna. So it's not hard to get to, surprisingly, because a lot of the airspace above northern Iraq is a lot of airlines avoid it for obvious reasons.
Right. And I know covering the Vatican brings its own perils, but anyone who heard that you were heading off to Iraq probably at least gave you a raised eyebrow. How secure did you feel?
It's surprisingly secure, actually. And in some ways, one felt more secure there due to the military there and just the fact that ISIS is kind of contained now than perhaps one would in sort of London or New York. So it was actually quite safe. And we were 130 miles from Mosul, which is still occupied by ISIS. But there was no sense of being alert or people being very edgy or scared or in any way worried. So I think, in many ways, the danger of ISIS in Iraq, I think, is diminishing quite quickly. And I think people are hopeful that soon ISIS will be gone from the country.
Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for NCR and senior contributor for EWTN, talking with Edward Penton, the National Catholic Register's Rome correspondent, about his recent trip to Iraq. Well, Edward, you mentioned that after 2 years, it's understandable that people are somewhat pessimistic, rather gloomy. How hopeful are they, though, realistically for the future? And obviously, what can we do in the West, especially in the United States, to help them?
Yes. Well, it's funny enough, a lot of the people I spoke to, the refugees that I talked to, were hopeful that they could go back to their towns and that they would be quite happy to do that. Some were obviously not happy to do that because they don't trust, especially the Muslims, in the places that they are, in the villages and the regions that they are, since ISIS took over. So there's a mixture of hope and not hope, really. There's a mixture of quite strong pessimism. But certainly there's a strong sense that I picked up of the West kind of abandoning them. A lot of them felt abandoned by the West, especially Western governments, but also the church, they felt, hadn't done enough. I think the only church that had seemingly done what they wanted was the French Catholic Church, who'd been given a lot of aid and actually helped set up one of the main camps in Erbil. But apart from that, they feel as though they're just not being cared for, they're not being looked out for by their Christian brothers and sisters, and that came across quite strongly. So I think what they want is obviously prayer, but they want some practical help. They obviously need some aid, and they would like, I think, probably sort of pressure put on local politicians to get action from government. And another thing that came across quite clearly was that they're looking to the United States to help them. They believe that only the U.S. and the U.S. military can really sort this problem out with ISIS. And they also feel that the U.S. has a responsibility to do that because they feel that the U.S. and their allies are responsible for this chaos because of the invasion of Iraq. Mm-hmm. They felt that actually under Saddam, although it had its problems, there was at least peace for Christians. And ever since the Iraq War, there's been a huge number of Christians left the country. And I think there's something like 5 to 10 families leaving each day from Iraq, is what one local priest told me. So they really look to the West to help them, and especially to the U.S., and they feel they have the U.S. has a great responsibility to do that.
Mm-hmm. And their relationship with the Kurdish authorities seems pretty positive, at least that's what we're hearing. Were you able to confirm that?
Yes, I think generally, although there's a lot of lack of trust there because they feel like let down by the Kurdish authorities when ISIS came. They felt that the government, either Kurdish or Iraqi, should have helped defend them or at least given them warning. And now they're a bit concerned over who will rule them once peace returns. They're worried about whether it will be the Kurdish government or the Iraqi government. It leaves a lot of uncertainty for them. But they feel that the government, either Kurdish or Iraqi, isn't really doing enough for them. So they're not too positive about that. But at the same time, that's their only hope, really, is to look for government to step in and help them as well.
Well, you're on the ground there. You were just there looking and talking with people. Do you think that there's any practical value? Can it work to establish a kind of autonomous state surrounding Mosul where all of the minority groups would be able to live together?
That is one option. I think it's an option favored by particularly the Chaldean Church. Patriarch Sarko of Baghdad is certainly favors that. But there is a problem there, too, in that I think there's concern that that they might have that enclave, but that doesn't mean that they're going to necessarily be able to live in peace. There's still threats from outside. They still feel that once ISIS has gone, probably another extremist Islamist group will come to replace them, just as it has in the past. But on the other hand, they are quite confident. The Peshmerga, the Kurdish army, is quite popular and quite strong here. They're strong there, so I think they're quite hopeful that they will be able to defend them. We talked to one Peshmerga captain who was very confident that whoever replaces ISIS will soon be beaten. They said that in 3 years we'll beat them off too. So they're very positive that they can obviously beat whoever comes next. But there's a constant problem in northern Iraq with these extremist Islamist groups, and I think they realize that even if ISIS goes, there'll just be another one to replace them.
Yeah. What are you working on by way of reporting this trip?
I've just filed a long piece on this trip with pictures, which I hope will be published soon. But I have a couple of interviews, I think, as well, to go up as well to join that article. So those should be being published over the next few days.
Excellent. I know all of us are very much looking forward to your reporting on this. And I also know that you're going to be covering Pope Francis's trip very closely to Georgia and a few other developments.
Yes, I won't be on the ground in Georgia, but I will be filing certainly some blogs and a wrap-up at the end, I expect. Mm-hmm. Our brothers at Catholic News Agency will also be covering that. We'll have a correspondent on the papal plane for that as well.
Excellent. Well, I know we always look forward to your coverage. Edward, I'm very grateful for your time today, and all of us at the Register were delighted that you were able to get there and back. So safely.
Yes. Thanks very much, Matthew. Good to talk to you.
Well, when I come back, I'm going to talk with Dr. Ben Weicker about pluralism and multiculturalism, and a rather important topic given this election year and where we are in culture. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. More when we return.
Bishop Robert Barron talks about the importance of the National Catholic Register.
You know, the Register delivers something which is extremely important because you won't get it from the mainstream media, namely the Catholic context and perspective. Sometimes the mainstream media will pretend, oh, they don't have a perspective. They're just giving the news neutrally. Well, no one does that. Everyone's got a perspective. What they often bring is a sort of secularist ideology. The National Catholic Register brings a robustly Catholic take on the world, and that's indispensably important.
For a free 6-issue trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy our online content.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back to Register Radio. I'm Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for the National Catholic Register and senior contributor for EWTN. You know, we hear all the words all the time that try to describe today's culture: pluralistic, diverse, multicultural. In the age of political correctness, it can be difficult to know what these terms really mean and what implications they might have for our society and the quest for the common good. To talk about these terms, I'm joined by Dr. Benjamin Weicker, a Register writer and blogger, an associate professor of political science, director of human life studies, and senior fellow of the Veritas Center for Ethics and Public Life at Franciscan University of Steubenville. He's the author of 10 books, his latest being Worshiping the State, How Liberalism Became Our State Religion. Dr. Weicker, welcome to Register Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm very grateful that you were willing to join us because your piece on pluralism and multiculturalism seems so wonderfully timely, given the election, of course, but also the wider PC culture of today. Let's start with something very basic. Why is language so important, and why is a proper definition of words also so crucial?
Well, the problem is that people use words in such a loose way, and then they have moral overtones to them, and we really don't know what they are truly implying. And the words pluralism and diversity and multiculturalism are, or tolerance, we could add a whole list of them, are the kinds of words that, when they're not defined clearly, are loose cannons on the, you know, the deck of the public square, so to speak, if I can mix metaphors there, because they don't, you know, given the kind of moral tone that people use them with, it's like they're demanding to be accepted, even if they're not understood. So in order to know whether, say, diversity is a good thing, or pluralism is a good thing, or multiculturalism is a good thing, we have to go beyond merely just pronouncing them in austere voices with moral overtones and say, well, what do you even mean by that?
Yeah, and it does seem today that language more than ever is very plastic.
Yes.
That people are able to torture and bend it to whatever they want it to be.
Yes, exactly. And in a way, that's if to take it back a little historically, that was actually a device used by those who were trying to undermine the Christian moral and political order, using terms that allowed them to get in contrary views, as if allowing the bad views in the public sphere were kind of a moral mandate. So you have the notion that tolerance is a good thing. You have the notion, again, that that pluralism is a good thing. And we even have a moral mandate for those things, when the question wasn't asked, well, what do you mean? What are you adding? Is it a is it something that will help the public good or will destroy the public good?
Mm-hmm. And tolerance today is one of those weaponized terms, isn't it?
Exactly, because it's really about all that's left in a culture of the moral language when that culture assumes there is no good and evil. There is no rational way to settle a moral argument and come up with an understanding of what is good, which is definitive. And so we just have to give up, and we'll tolerate all the different views because basically they're all irrational, and so they all have to be given, you know, equal opportunity to support themselves and be supported by the government. And again, that itself was a as it were, a scheme or a clever ploy by relativism to break down the Christian moral order and substitute relativism for it.
Mm-hmm. And we can add to that that it seems as though everything in language, from diversity to tolerance, is now political.
It is, because it's in what we've got is the notion passed into the government that its goal is to maximize diversity and tolerance. What that really means under the guise of pseudo-moral language is we need to stop Christians from saying that, now put in the blank, abortion is bad, homosexuality is not a good thing, the gay marriage is not a good thing. So we're going to impose in a seemingly neutral way mandated tolerance, which of course means mandated intolerance for Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're listening to Register Radio here on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. I'm Dr. Matthew Bunsen, senior editor for NCR and senior contributor for EWTN. I'm talking with Dr. Benjamin Weicker, and we're discussing issues of pluralism, tolerance, and multiculturalism. Well, Doctor, your article assists the average person in understanding terms that are used all the time, but as we've been discussing, are often misunderstood. Diversity is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about diversity, but also then talk about pluralism, because the two seem so intimately connected today.
Yeah, basically, we tend to use them as synonyms, and all we mean by that is, let's have more stuff, you know, which is pretty doggone vague. It doesn't tell you whether the stuff you're adding is truly good or not. And so what I've suggested is let's get a little more clear about defining our terms. Let's make a distinction between diversity on the one hand and pluralism on the other. Let me give the example. We have diversity in bodily organs. We have eyes, we have ears, we have a nose, we have lungs, we have a heart. So there's obviously not just one kind of a human body part. There is a diversity of them, and the diversity all serves the common good of the human being. So that's an example of, well, there is diversity here. That diversity is not just randomly contrived. You don't have three or four noses, however many you want. There's only one. But a nose is not an eye, is not an ear, and so on. So there is a real diversity that serves the common good of the body. The same thing might be said of an ecosystem if you went into that, or even an economy, that is, you have a diversity in the different goods and services, all of which serve the common good. So there is a good and real need for diversity in those senses. But notice they're all governed by an overarching real good. Mm-hmm. You know, in other words, it's not just adding another thing that you might happen to want. The question is it good for the whole, that is, say, the whole body or the economy or the common good, or is it detrimental? So merely, cheering diversity doesn't tell you anything if you don't understand, well, this is what real diversity would mean. It's kind of an organic, harmonious whole where different parts serve the common good and themselves at the same time.
Yeah,
as opposed to pluralism, which is just, let's add more stuff. We're not going to ask whether it's good or evil. We're just going to add something that wasn't there before indiscriminately without questions about whether it's a benefit or a harm for the common good.
Well, and then, of course, there's multiculturalism, which is even more loaded as a term, but especially in Europe, though, where it's not just a term, but it strikes me as an entire social system.
Yes, and this is when it gets really sticky because, oh, we're not allowed to say that this or that culture is good or bad or is better than this or that culture. But notice the Catholic Church embraces a multitude of cultures under its universality, and it doesn't destroy them. That is, it brings them into the body of Christ, but it transforms them at the same time. So there's a legitimate notion where you can have different kinds of cultures, but they can be brought into one good and helpful whole, the church. What people tend to mean, that's sort of like a diversity, and what people tend to mean by multiculturalism is any old culture is as good as any other one, and we don't have to ask questions about transformation of that culture, a correction of that culture, or perhaps whether the culture is based on something that's bad. So often the notion of multiculturalism is put forth with high moral tones saying, well, you can't be against multiculturalism because you can't say any culture is good or bad. Well, in fact, the church does. The culture based on secularism is a culture of death. That is, it creates a hedonistic society which sees abortion as good, which sees sexuality as something that is basically a large playground allowed by technology and so on. So, you know, you can make a distinction between a good and a bad culture. In Europe, they are running into that situation. They have a pretty much a spent Christian culture on which a secular culture has been built, being invaded by a Muslim culture, which it will, when it reaches a kind of a critical mass, destroy both the secular and the Christian. And so a deeper analysis of culture it demands that you look at what is at the basis of the culture. Is a culture based on Sharia law going to undermine both Christianity and, on the other side, the sort of the PC correct liberal regime that you associate with modern liberal secularism?
Mm-hmm.
So those are real questions, and Europe is not engaged in a theoretical debate about this. It's quite literally being swamped by a culture which, when it reaches a critical mass, as it has in places in England and especially France, and now in Sweden, it just transforms everything, and it submerges the Christian-based culture and the secular culture both. So merely saying multiculturalism as if you can add things indiscriminately is sort of like having cake baking, in which you can throw in anything that happens to be in the cupboards.
Mm-hmm. This is clearly not a basis for establishing a long-term stable social system, is it?
Well, you can't. I mean, what you have in Europe, especially clear, is you have the culture based on secular liberalism, which holds up, you know, hedonism as a kind of goal. Well, it's, because of that, it's undergoing demographic implosion. I mean, in other words, people are having sex, but they aren't having babies. Well, what that leaves is a literal vacuum into which you're having a flood of immigration of people who are fundamentally opposed to the basic beliefs of the place they are flooding into.
Mm-hmm.
And that's causing a real conflict, and you can't pretend, and they're not pretending, that you don't have to ask deep questions then because of that.
Yeah, and those deep questions are posed in many ways by your commentary for The Register. The title of it is Diversity, Pluralism, and Multiculturalism. And I know, speaking on behalf of, as an avid reader of The Register, I appreciated your insights on this because I think it's something we really need to be talking about.
It is, but, you know, it's difficult to talk when people are simply not clear about the terms, or they simply say, you know, they're advocates of pluralism.
Yeah, exactly.
That is, indiscriminate advocates, or on top of the, or they're more like PC advocates. Basically, what they're going to do is, as soon as they get in control, it's not Sharia law they're going to impose, it's secular liberalism,
exactly.
And Christianity will be all the worse for it.
Well, Doctor, thank you so much for being a guest today, and look forward to having you on again.
I thank you very much as well.
Well, thank you so much for listening to Register Radio this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining me this week on Register Radio here on EWTN. For my producer, Jeff Burson, I am Matthew Bunsen. Until next week, take care and God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.